गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारे जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारे यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद इस डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिलो प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 27 टेक्स्ट 10 तेषु तद्रिक्तहारेषु गृहकोशानुजीविषु निरूढेन ममत्वेन विषयेषु अन्वबध्यत तेषु तद्रिक्तहारेषु गृहकोशानुजीविषु निरूढेन ममत्वेन विषयेषु अन्वबध्यत तेषु तद्रिक्तहारेषु गृहकोशानुजीविषु निरूढेन ममत्वेन विषयेषु आत्मबध्यत तेषु तद्रिक्तहारेषु गृहकोशानुजीविषु निरूढेन ममत्वेन विषयेषु अन्वबध्यत लेडीज प्लीज तेषु तद्रिक्तहारेषु विषयेष्वन्ववाद्यता तेषु तद्विक्तहारेषु गृहकोशानुजीविषु निरूढेन ममत्वेन विषयेष्वन्ववाद्यता Teshu, to them, tad riktahareshu, the plunderers of his money, gruha, home, kosha, treasury, anujivishu, to the followers, nirudhena, deep-rooted, mamatvena, by attachment, Vishayeshu, to sense objects, Anvabadhyata, became bound. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. These sons and grandsons were virtually plunderers of King Puranjana's riches, including his home, treasury, servants, secretaries, and all other paraphernalia. Puranjana's attachment for these things was very deep-rooted. Purport. In this verse, the word riktahareshu, meaning plunderers of wealth, is very significant. One's sons, grandsons, and other descendants are ultimately plunderers of one's accumulated wealth. There are many celebrated businessmen and industrialists who produce great wealth and are highly praised by the public, but all their money is ultimately plundered by their sons and grandsons. In India, we have actually seen one industrialist who, like King Puranjana, was very much sexually inclined and had half a dozen wives. Each of these wives had a separate establishment that necessitated the expenditure of several thousands of rupees. When I was engaged in talking with him, I saw that he was very busy trying to secure money so that all his sons and daughters would get at least 500,000 rupees each. Thus, such industrialists, businessmen or karmis are called mudhas in the shastras. They work very hard, accumulate money, and are satisfied to see that this money is plundered by their sons and grandsons. Such people do not want to return their wealth to its actual owner. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. The real proprietor of all wealth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the actual enjoyer. So-called earners of money are those who simply know tricks by which they can take away God's money under the guise of business and industry. After accumulating this money, they enjoy seeing it plundered by their sons and grandsons. This is the materialistic way of life. In materialistic life, one is encaged within the body and deluded by false egoism. Thus one thinks, I am this body. I am a human being, I am an American, I am an Indian. This bodily conception is due to false ego. Being deluded by false ego, one identifies himself with a certain family, nation, or community. In this way, one's attachment for the material world grows deeper and deeper. Thus, it becomes very difficult for the living entity to extricate himself from his entanglement. Such people are graphically described in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verses 13 through 15, in this way. Idam adyamaya labdham imam prapsye manoratham idam astidam apime bhavishyati punardhanam असौ मया हत शत्रुर् हन्यशे चापरानपि ईश्वरोऽहम् अहम् भोगी सिद्धोऽहम् बलवान् सुखी आढ्योऽभिजनवताम् अस्मि कोऽन्योऽस्ति सदृशो मया यक्ष्ये दास्यामि मोदिस्य इति अज्ञानविमोहिता. Quote, the demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. End quote. In this way, people engage in various laborious activities, and their attachment for body, home, family, nation, and community becomes more and more deep-rooted. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya. Om ajñānat mirandhasya gyananjana shalākhaya chakṣurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthāpitam yena bhūtale svayam rūpa kadā mahyam dadāti svapadantikam vāñcā kalpatarubhyascha kṛpā sindhubhya evacha patitānām pāvanebhyo vaiṣṇavebhyo namo namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityānanda shri advaita gadādhāra śrīvāsādi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare. Riktha Hareshu, plunderers of wealth. So in King Puranjana's story, Puranjana is the conditioned living entity. He is the king or master of Panchala Desha, or that land made of five gates. That is the body. And he has a very attractive wife, Puranjani, that is the intelligence. And by his association with his intelligence or with his wife, he has brought forth 1,100 sons and 110 daughters, which we understand to be the different varieties of activities or actions and reactions in his life. And each of these sons and daughters, he made sure that they were married, and each of these sons and daughters in turn produced hundreds of children. And this way, Panchala Desha was overcrowded with his progeny and descendants. So his life was full of varieties of activities, and each of these activities were on the basis of his attachment, and the activities are called specifically in Puranjana's situation, or the allegory is that a conditioned soul acts on the basis of attachment. Wherever is the attachment, that is where the activities will go. Because the attachment covers or pervades one's consciousness. And all activities, considerations are on the basis of either that or those attachments. And these attachments are very funny. I mean, they act in a way that they cloud our vision of reality. And they are such that we don't know what those attachments are. There are some that we know of. There are gazillions that we are not aware of. Those that we are aware of, some we don't want to acknowledge. It's called denial. Some we might acknowledge, but we might not want to publicly admit it. Or we don't have to stand on a pedestal and tell everyone, Haribol, today I'd like to give you a list of my attachments. Not necessary. Each person is busy with their own list. But it's in situations where something happens, and most of the time one person is acting through their false ego, and that clashes with our false ego, and suddenly two false egos clash with each other, and that creates dissension or the whole dynamic of a particular situation. But it's important that each person recognizes, if Krishna gives that intelligence and that vision at that moment or later, whenever, I was acting on the basis of that list of attachments. It's important. That recognition is purifying. It opens the door for what's called Atma Samshuddhi, purification of one's existence. So, and some attachments are such that everyone else knows or can see it except us. Everyone else can notice. Nityananda Pran Prabhu, you have this attachment. Except myself. I can't notice it. And people are afraid to say it to me. Prabhu, this is something you need to work on. Because they're afraid what kind of reaction I might, come back with. Because what is one of the natures of an attachment? How do we know that there is attachment? What are some of the symptoms to indicate that there might be an attachment, Richard? Aversion to change. Okay. Anger. Okay. Correct. It's where our attention goes during japa time. Correct. Another set of symptoms is there is pain, there is sadness, there is fear. All these affects are indications that there is some attachment somewhere. The specific nature of it might not show up like that, but that's an indicator. And when these affects cover our consciousness, we mostly respond to those, what we call affects, and not to the real situation. For example, if fear or sadness or anger, then in that particular circumstance where our attachment is touched, then we're mostly operating on anger, let's say, and our whole consciousness is pervaded by that situation that makes us angry, and why that person, why they said like this, why, and the real situation is perhaps clouded. And what happens with attachment is, like it said, iti ajnana vimohita, it covers our vision of reality. And when we don't see reality, then we are basically groping in the dark. Or we're groping in darkness. So we don't know. And when we grope in the darkness, we're just trying to do something, then that has further, those actions further implicate us in reactions and dissension and trouble and all of that. And attachment comes from giving value to something that does not have value. the material attachment. Spiritual attachment comes from giving value to that which is valuable. So the Bhagavad Gita gives us a very simple principle. Where does attachment come from? Comes from contemplation. Dhyayato vishayan pumsam sanga steshu upajayate. And sangat sanjayate kama. All our aspirations and desires come forth from those attachments. Because that's what we're contemplating on. So when we contemplate on Krishna, topics of Krishna, the devotees, the glories of the devotees, the good qualities of the devotees, however hard they might be to find, they're there. Then that's the nature of attachment. But if the contemplation is on the shortcomings, the mistakes, the attitudes, and that's the nature of contemplation, then our attachments develop to those qualities. So the quintessential example is of attachment is Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was blind. So it is said that he was materially blind and spiritually blind too. And that blindness comes from attachment. He was very attached to Duryodhana and very attached to the idea that he should be the king. And it didn't matter who gave him advice. It just did not matter. He was simply attached. And part of that attachment is that the blindness was so severe that the whole Kuru dynasty, including, you know, Krishna, Vidura, Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Bhishma Deva, they all said to Dhritarashtra, your son Duryodhana is doing something really very, very wrong. It is so seriously adharmic that the entire Kuru dynasty will be finished. Please do something. And he just turned a blind eye. Because his son being the king was more important and valuable than the rest of the Kuru dynasty's survival. And so these attachments, they plunder us. We plunder whatever wealth of that one may have created. In this case, the wealth is piety. All those pious credits are plundered by wasteful activities or material activities. Trying to make the material world or the material circumstance a better situation is a plundering of piety. So Prabhupada writes this purport on the basis of how a person works very hard, called mudha, meaning working very, very hard, accumulating a lot of money, or at least aspiring to accumulate a lot of money. Whether in reality one accumulates a lot of money or not is a different issue. And after accumulating all of that money, what does he or she do with that? Spends it for, here it says, the plunderers, the sons and grandsons. So if they have sons and daughters, then all of that money is accumulated for college education, dowry, or expenditure in marriage. So typical phenomenon is that a person works very hard from morning till night, sits in traffic for hours together, or goes long distances commuting, sits in the office situation for 8 hours, 10 hours. Of course, no one works 8 hours, but 10 hours, 12 hours. It's common that people have 70-hour work weeks, 80-hour work weeks, etc. And the only motivator is money. And they become extremely rejoiced when the numbers on the bank account show a nice increase. And they become extremely morose when suddenly expenses show up. And whatever money that they're keeping aside and that happiness that these numbers are increasing, what do they spend it for? especially, I'm sure it's even in America, but Indian weddings or any wedding, that's what they spend it for, daughter's or son's wedding. You have to pay for a hall rental, you have to pay for catering of the food, you have to pay for all the fancy saris and clothes that the bride and the groom will wear, you have to pay for all the decorations that you have to put up, you have to pay for the, you know, really uninspired musicians who come. You have to pay for the, nowadays it's DJs. And by the end of it, it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the foolish thing is, after all of that expenditure, they feel very satisfied. Ah, I have faithfully executed the responsibility of my life. And part of that attachment is because, oh, this is my responsibility. Karmanneva adhikaraste. I'm supposed to do this. So when it comes to giving charity for the spreading of Krishna consciousness, they become tight-fisted. Oh, I should give for, what is this, Prabhu? You're asking me for Janmashtami. You're also asking me for Rath Yatra. And you know, why are the festivals are so close to each other? Can you spread them out a little bit? So that at least it's not, you know, two checks at the same time. Or there's a little calculation in the mind. I can give so much money, I have to spread it out, divide it by 12. This sums a little higher. Maybe, what is all this? But the same calculation doesn't even occur when they have to buy a new gadget. It just doesn't even occur to them. Oh, it's the latest gizmo. Or I have to buy this, or I have to buy that. What is this? It actually deludes the consciousness of a, here it says, a money earner. The delusion is, this is my money. And the further delusion is, I have to have this security, this nice balance somewhere. I have a threshold. Each of us has a threshold. If I have 40,000 in the bank, then I'm safe. Above that is bonus. Or something like that. Who said? You know, how did we come to that threshold? One sickness in the family and poof, all that vanishes. You know, by the time you pay doctor's bills or something. Or, you know, something. Every person has standard pot. Some have big pots, some have small pots. And you cannot fill more or less than that. You definitely cannot fill more than that. Whatever is there is there. But the whole idea of seeing Krishna as the shelter, as a protector, becomes weaker when one's attachment to money grows, that this is my security. For what? The Bhagavatam says, anyway, it's being plundered. Being plundered by the sons and grandsons. One of my favorite stories, Kailash story, but it's a long story, so I don't like to edit Kailash story. I like to actually say it in a full elaborate, so I'll save it for a Sunday feast someday. You've heard Kailash story? Prabhupada narrates the story of Kailash. I actually have a friend, Kailash. When I was speaking this, he lives in St. Louis, and he actually chuckled the most, apparently. I said, this is Prabhupada's mercy on you. But this whole idea that I am the proprietor because I have earned it. I have worked very hard. This is my money. And because it is my money, I have the right to spend it the way I like it. And Prabhupada writes that they don't understand they work very hard, accumulate money, and are satisfied to see that this money is plundered by their sons and grandsons. Such people do not want to return their wealth to its actual owner. Bhuktaram Yagyatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. The real proprietor of all wealth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the actual enjoyer. So-called earners of money are those who simply know tricks by which they can take away God's money under the guise of business and industry. So it does not mean that one should not have something set aside. It does not mean that one should not spend it for their family. That's not the meaning. The meaning here, Prabhupada's teaching us, is that the primary purpose of engaging ourselves in an occupation is for purification of existence. It is to help us progressively understand that we are not the proprietors. Krishna is. And it is a method of using our senses to bring Krishna's happiness, to serve Krishna through our senses. So Rupa Goswami has given us the formula. 50% for Krishna's service, 25% for emergencies, and 25% savings. He's not saying don't spend. It's necessary. This is Krishna's system. When one wants to know, so Prabhu, if I spend away all my money, don't you think sometime some emergencies might come? What if Krishna does not show up at that time, or how will it manifest? But Krishna's already manifested it by telling us through Rupa Goswami that you set 25% aside. And it'll be fine. In fact, that the very fact that one aspires to come to that standard, however practical, but at least that there is an intention to do so, just that will help protect us from the onslaughts of material energy. However, if one tries to manipulate material energy, trying to, make our situation better, it will never happen. Daivihi esha gunamayi, mama maya duratyaya. It is impossible to manipulate material energy in such a way that there will be no inconvenience. The other word for material energy is inconvenience. Varieties of inconveniences. And now we'll talk a little about the nature of attachment. Attachments are like roots. They grow deeper and deeper and deeper. And the watering of those roots is the contemplation on this bodily concept of life. The more one has a bodily concept of life, the deeper the attachments. Because one identifies with, I am this. We did a little exercise at one of our college presentations. We wrote on the board, I am, put a blank, and asked different people, fill this blank. And we got varieties of answers. I am man, I am woman, I am Indian, I am American, I am scientist, I am a student, I am happy, I am sad, I am rich, I am broke. I am very good, I am very bad, I am this. And we said after all of that list, we are none of all of this. But we operate on the basis of this identification of who I am. And the more we act on those false identities, the deeper the attachments become. Now, there are some that, like we said earlier, we're not even aware of, so naturally they will become deeper. But those that Krishna brings to our attention, somehow or the other, Krishna brings to our attention in many different ways. Some are direct, a devotee will tell us. Some Krishna will inspire from within the heart. Some may come through studying a purport, or some verse might show up. Some might happen in someone else's life and we might notice something about ourselves. A random person on the street might say something to us. And if it is valid, we can take that as instruction. However, Krishna will bring it to our attention. How it comes to our attention, or how much are we open to hearing Krishna's feedback, depends on the quality of our japa. If we are inattentive to chanting, while we are chanting japa, then whatever Krishna is also giving to us, we'll be inattentive to it. The whole idea of chanting japa is, we're requesting Krishna, please engage me in your service. So naturally Krishna will indicate, well, I'm happy to give you service, here's a little impediment in that service. So the quality of japa opens up our consciousness to receive proper input from wherever Krishna wants to give it, or however Krishna wants to give us that input. And being open to that is a symbol or is an indication of our seriousness to chanting japa. Otherwise it's in the morning, you know, it's a ritual in the morning, and then the rest of the day, as feedback comes in or input comes in or some realization comes in, some awakening comes, we may just not take it. So we need the association of devotees to say, you know, this is something that's coming up again and again, or it's a new realization. Have you noticed something like this in me? Or if you do notice, can you tap me on the shoulder and let me know? Because, you know, this is attachment, something I don't see. Maybe you see it. It's an important exercise. Because attachments are impediments. They hold us down. Here it says, anvabadhya. Anvabadhyata. Becoming bound. He became bound. The whole idea of Krishna consciousness is to free us from our attachments, to free us to our real identity. And watering or feeding the attachments is acting counterproductive. So we sometimes wonder, I'm chanting sincerely, at least I'm trying to chant sincerely. At least I'm chanting every day. Why is it so sluggish? Why is my progress so sluggish? It's attachments, we have the anchors down. And attachments are like clouds. So these clouds need to be cleared. They come out in different, the language is anarthas. You know, we say anarthas, unwanted. And these attachments, different people have different sets of attachments. But everything arising from bodily concept of life. Some people have attachment to their money. Some people have attachment to family. Some people have attachment to nation. Some people have attachment to doing greater good to humanity. Some people have attachment to certain dharmic principles. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually analyzes that the anarthas that we have arise from different sources. One is obvious. The anarthas or attachments arise from past sinful activities. That's obvious. Another, he says that anarthas arise from past pious activities. And they become stumbling blocks in the progress of Krishna consciousness. Because we are attached to our conceptions of what is dharma. So for example, Yudhishthir Maharaj. It's a classical example. Yudhishthir Maharaj, he is known as Dharmaraj, the upholder of righteousness under every circumstance. Doesn't matter what circumstance, however painful it was to himself, he always stood for righteousness. During the Mahabharata war, Krishna picked Dharmaraj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, and told him, the only way we can kill Dronacharya is when he comes to know that his son Ashwatthama is killed. Then he has no motivation to fight. He's just going to drop his weapons And that's when we have to kill him. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, you have to say that we have killed his son. Ashwatthama, they have to call out, Ashwatthama is dead. And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't do it. The whole world knows me as Dharmaraj. And you're asking me to speak a lie. I cannot do it. And this was a big test for him. So they organized, the mechanics of it, they organized it in such a way that Bhima is going to kill an elephant called Ashwatthama. And as soon as he kills that elephant, Yudhishthira Maharaj is supposed to say, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed, yes, that I can do. So they, Bhima, you know, hit the elephant with his mace. The elephant has died. And Yudhishthira Maharaj said, Ashwatthama, he's supposed to say, Iti Kunjara, that elephant, Hataha, died. So Yudhishthira Maharaj said, Ashwatthama. When he said, Iti Kunjara, Krishna blew the conch. So Dronacharya didn't hear Ashwatthama, the elephant. He just said, Ashwatthama is dead. And then he just dropped his weapons. And that's how the Pandavas killed Dronacharya. Our Acharyas explain that Yudhishthira Maharaj had a chariot that was so powerful and mystic. It was full of mystic power that its wheels never touched the ground. But the day he denied or rejected following Krishna's instruction, the wheels touched the ground. It became ordinary. All the mystic potency vanished. Of course, Yudhishthira Maharaj is a great personality. It's not like he doesn't follow Krishna's instruction or, you know. That's not the message. The message Krishna used Yudhishthira Maharaj to teach a particular lesson. Like Prabhupada would quote that a mother-in-law will teach the daughter-in-law through the daughter, because the daughter-in-law is not so accessible. She won't listen so easily. But the daughter, she can chastise. So like that. So we may be attached. We may be attached to certain conceptions, ideas. We may be attached to, I want to spread Krishna consciousness like this. The guru or someone may say, do this. Ah, what is this? I don't want it. I want it like this. No, no, please do this. No, I would like to do this. It's an attachment. Big, small, tiny, minuscule, doesn't matter the magnitude of it, it's an attachment. And when there is an attachment, good instruction doesn't enter the heart. How much ever good it might be, one might even say, I understand it, but I don't want to follow. Or another aspect of attachment is, even perfect instruction may come, and we might say, I don't see, I don't understand it the same way that you see it. I see it very differently. Oh, naturally, one who's attached sees it very differently from one who's not attached. So what to do? What is the secret to go, or what's the method to go from an attached position to an unattached position? The very simple qualities that's necessary is what's called open-mindedness. That we at least say, okay, I'm open to what you're saying. I'm open to what the scripture is saying. I'm open to what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are saying. That let me at least consider that there is a possibility that my vision is colored with my attachment. I may know that attachment, I may not know that attachment, but at least I can accept, I can fit somewhere the idea that I don't see the whole truth. That's good enough. That's a good start. But even without that, oh no, like this, oh, shh. Then one doesn't get anywhere. What happens? One gets plundered. The plundering is that all of the human energy gets wasted. It's not human energy gets wasted because I get tired and I need to drink Gatorade. Not like that energy. The human form of life. That is why most people at the time of death lament. The lamentation is, oh, how I wasted my life. Even if they've done so-called great work, worldly level of great work, still they lament. Ah, there's so much I couldn't have done, I should have done something. The nature of lamentation is, I could have, I should have, I must have. The nature of old age is worry. One is always worrying, lamenting. Even if they voluntarily did it, happily did it, oh, all my money got spent. And look at them. They're spending it away like anything. Look at them. They have absolutely no gratitude for all the wealth that I distributed. I worked very hard for them. I'm doing all this for you, is what the father or mother will say to a child. I'm working very hard, earning all this money for you. Because there's attachment. I'm doing it for you because you are mine. Then Prabhupada describes the mentality of this is the demoniac mentality. The first three verses of 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita talk about saintly, divine qualities. Atma samshuddhi is the word that comes up there too. That a person with divine qualities works with the purpose of self-purification. And this set of verses are those, or of those, or that consciousness that is highly attached, and because of high attachment, thinks that he is the most powerful person, especially in terms of wealth. So he says, idam adya maya labdham. I have received all this money now or today. Imam prapse manoratham, and I will accumulate more. Idam astidam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. I have a lot now, and I will have a lot more in the future. Aso maya hata shatrur. I have killed my enemy. Hanishye chaparanapi. And if there are any more left, I will get rid of them too. Who's an enemy? Anyone who stands between me and my sense gratification is an enemy. And that may be a saintly person giving good advice. Still an enemy. It is said, right? You give an attached person good advice and he becomes angry. Ishwaroham aham bhogi, siddoham balavanapi. Ishwaroham, I'm the controller. I'm controlling my situation of life. I've got everything under control. I figured it out. Aham bhogi. Does not need translation. Aham bhogi. Siddhoham, balavan, sukhi. I am perfect, I am strong, I am very happy. Adhyo, abhijanavan asmi, eko anyosti sadrusho maya. Just see. Just see how great I am. Yakshe dasyami modisya. Such person becomes bewildered, deluded by those attachments. And iti agyana vimohita, all good sense dies. The good sense that life is more valuable than just the useless pursuit of material goals. That life is more valuable. Arthadam. This is Prahlad Maharaj's specific instruction. Komaracharet pragyo. Dharman bhagavataniha, durlabham manusham janma, arthadam api adruvam. Arthadam, it has great value. It can give great value, and although rare, adruvam. Rare. Durlabham manusham janma. It's rare, but one wastes it. One wastes it by pursuing material goals. Or something that's closer to home, We may not have material goals, but we might waste our energy and time solving material circumstances. Or finding ourselves in the middle of really insignificant things. It may be as simple as he said, she said, and takes away our whole energy and time. And how you say? Or you didn't say, you did not say, she did not say, he did not say, I wish he said. I wish you said it like this. Why did you say? I'm not advocating that we don't solve or interact and try to understand each other better. That's nice. It's important. But if it's done with the purpose of elevating ourselves and others, minimally ourselves, or at least helping ourselves be understood, that's fine. But not endlessly. Endlessly. It's a waste. The opposite of that attachment is aversion. The aversion is, I don't care what you think of me. I'll just be like I am. If you like it, you like it. Otherwise, hey, it's your problem. That's the other side of that attachment. Indifference, callousness, hard-heartedness. That's also not okay. That is also attachment, another form, or the other side of attachment. Raga dvesha vimukta istu. So that dvesha is also not healthy. What is necessary is detached, performing our duty in that particular time, place and circumstance, whatever is the call of duty, performing that duty for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. And the most important thing that Krishna is pleased by is not a project. I had the great honor of sitting next to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj because he invited me to. And he was talking. So one of the things I asked him is, Maharaj, you have so much experience and empowerment to build a powerful community. Please, could you share something in terms of as an instruction or guidance for me? He didn't use fancy languages. Very simply, he said, doing projects is important, and that's nice. But the purpose of the projects is not so much money or this. Although it's part of the doing a project, that's why we do something. But what's important is, are the devotees being cared for? Are they feeling inspired? Are they feeling happy and satisfied and energized? So we should perform our duty, but the duty has that higher purpose. It is for the pleasure of the devotees. It's for the pleasure of the devotees that we are working with. What's the use of doing something extraordinarily well when the persons with us are not satisfied? Krishna doesn't care for that. Krishna doesn't care for the extraordinary result. Krishna cares for the extraordinary consideration of another devotee's pleasure, of another devotee's convenience. He cares for how much thought we've put in for others, fellow devotees. That's more important. He doesn't care how well we did something or not did something. I mean, Krishna can do anything much better than any of us, individually or combined. He doesn't need us. He doesn't need us to dress him. He doesn't need us to sing for him. He doesn't need us to go out on his behalf and do this and do that. And it doesn't necessary. But what spirit do we do it? We do it in the spirit of assisting Srila Prabhupada. That's all. Because the wonderful relationship exists between the two, and we're just trying to take a little drop from there. Our mood is that. We are assisting Prabhupada. And that too because Prabhupada is very lovingly engaged us. One realization I had going to India for 2.5 months, very much that of course is that I miss being in Kishore Kishori's family. That's given. But another very nice realization was, they don't need me. Whether I'm there or not there, things will happen. So I'm really insignificant. Completely dispensable. Any moment, Kishore Kishori can say, thank you very much. Here's your pink slip. You don't need to show up at work tomorrow. They can say it at a moment's notice, and that is very possible. So we're not doing Kishore, at least I'm not doing any favor to Kishore Kishori or Prabhupada. They're giving me great opportunity, a great privilege. So how ready am I to do what they want me to do versus what I want to do? And that's true, honestly, for each one of us. None of us is, you know, indispensable here. But then what do I put? Each of us has this little weigh scale, pan scale. I put my values, my attachments, and I put in what Krishna wants, and I weigh it. Generally, this side weighs heavy. What about, you know, Prabhu? What about my attachment? Or I think my idea is good. Why should I do this? Whatever is that. We give so much value to our attachments, our ideas. I'm not saying that they don't have value. Don't get me wrong. But at the moment of truth, where is it that we put our value? Yeah. That's what is the indicator of where our attachment is. And our attachments are always tested. I have attachment here also. I have attachment here also. That's true. I have some attachment for Krishna consciousness. I have some attachment to Krishna. I have some attachment to the devotees. I also have my, attachment to my attachments. What is it that I'm giving value to in that situation is important to know. It's an indicator. It doesn't make us a bad person. This is an indicator. Oh, that's some area for me to work on. Okay, we have quite time for one something, question, input, something. Would you like to say something? Hold on.
I observed in the last few years here in Chicago, the one thing that encourages me, not encourages in a positive sense, which may make it difficult for me to relinquish some of my attachments, is putting into question the Christian consciousness of the individuals who are guiding me or directing me. So as a result of questioning, not that they're not sincere devotees, but questioning how Christian conscious they really are, and therefore how much they really, really deeply concerned about my welfare, instead of more concerned about me doing something or getting a project done, then it kind of, one comes down to the level of like, that's their opinion, I also have my opinion. I was thinking like this, and then it comes to the point, like you think of an example, like in the seventh chapter of the first canto, where there's devotees on equal level, and they're having just a disagreement. So if one of them says open-mindedness, well, why don't you be open to my idea? So I noticed that that tends to happen, where a questioning the Christian consciousness, we're just unwilling to relinquish the attachments.
Right.
So I was thinking about that particularly in reference to your topic about the grihasthas not wanting to give money. And I because of this history of this temple, then they question the Christian consciousness of the individuals who are living in the temple or who are even maybe guiding the temple. And as a result of questioning how Christian conscious they really are, how much they really carrying out their duty, then they feel very comfortable to hang on to their money and their and facility because they're questioning the Christian consciousness of the individuals. So I don't know if you, I didn't have an exact question. I was trying to think of how to formulate it more into a question, but there seems to be a necessity of really Christian conscious persons. Still, that doesn't mean the person won't be attached, but it seems that will give more encouragement to letting go of the attachments and placing my shelter in higher guidance.
So
I was wanting to comment on that.
Okay.
you can expand upon that.
The first part of what you said, is that something that you observed as a general thing, or is that something for you particularly? That you question the Krishna consciousness of whether someone is thinking about your welfare?
Times. Personally, I've been pretty quick to place my trust in individuals and kind of let it go from there. I never have much problem with that. But I have seen with various devotees in the ashram situation, outside the ashram situation, they speculate something about a devotee, and the devotee may be trying to give them guidance or good advice, but because that speculation is there about the level of their Krishna consciousness, and they're just unwilling to relinquish their, even that, no, this is an attachment, they know it's not good, but because that person isn't really Krishna conscious, he's just, we're on equal ground, so it's just his opinion, I got my opinion. And this has happened, I've seen it quite a bit in the last few years.
Whoever may be, let's say the leader, definitely in this case the leader is not highly Krishna conscious, give it. But each one of us may have, definitely have one person that we know is definitely, you know, out there, our founder Acharya. Trusting that is a very great start. And we trust Prabhupada just doesn't mean, you know, oh, I only Prabhupada can sit there and that's how I trust Prabhupada. That's shallow. Trusting Prabhupada means I also trust what Prabhupada writes. I also trust what Prabhupada has said. I also trust what Prabhupada has set up. I may have experiences that may tell me, you know, something about this person. You know, Prabhupada writes something, but, you know, our leader may not be out there. Fine. But I trust Prabhupada's system. That's the beginning. And then there is the GBC, and definitely, you know, in this case, another very qualified, genuine person. And so we can always take it there. At this level, the leader may be this, that, however that we may have the perception, but there is someone that we can talk to. That's a good start. Then there may be very individual nuances of each person, and that needs to be discussed and looked at. So just a general comment back. Quick question and we'll... Can I explain the difference between attachment and anartha? Attachment and anartha are really not that different. Anartha means anything that is unnecessary or anything that has no value. Artha, anartha. So attachments are all anarthas because they have no value. Now, it's not that one is not attached, one should not be attached. Attached, the way we use it as a really bad disease. We use the word as a bad disease, attached, attached. It's not that attached doesn't mean we have to relinquish person or things, you know, we all give up our jobs and we become really reckless with the money. That's not there. The attachment is, here Prabhupada writes in this purport, the conception of who I am. Everything comes from there. Who am I? So one is not attached when one looks at things, one's relationships, looks at one's possessions, and looks at one's ideas, whatever this might be, from the view of, I am a servant of Krishna. That, from that vantage point, everything else, whatever one does, is not attachment. But most, in fact all, conditioned souls don't operate like that. They operate from something outside of that identity. And so when I am this body, then naturally the next phase of it is, this is mine, or this is not mine. Both are. And so the Bhagavatam says that all of that is unnecessary. because we are not that. Another way of understanding attachment is a conviction. A conviction of what will make me happy. That's an attachment. This relationship will make me happy. This worldly relationship will make me happy. This amount of money will make me happy. This following this idea, this conception will make me happy. So we're asking, who is thinking? Is it service, is it a devotee of Krishna thinking, or is it someone else thinking? Because if it's someone else, then it is artificial. So one is a father, let's say, or a husband, or a employee. A father, husband, employee, if they think I'm a servant of Krishna in this situation, is a different outcome than I'm an employee, I'm a husband, I am a husband, I'm a father. Okay, thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jāya.